When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Ann Thompson of IndieWire, and we've got, again, returning for a guest visit, Marcus Jones, our awards editor. And we we're still in the thick of the festival season, believe it or not, because in LA, we have the AFI Fest, which recently wrapped up. And he, you know, when every year when AFI Fest comes around, it's like, and often the AFM is going on at the same time out in Santa Monica. It's always very busy. It's just it reaches a certain peak of craziness because there's so many people around and so many interviews to do. And I'm sure you're feeling that too, Marcus. So what were some of the highlights of the AFI Fest? And how would you put the AFI Fest in the sort of context of other festivals? What's its role in the world?
Yeah, I would say to answer the second part first, that this is really LA's chance to see a lot of the films that were in the mix during fall festival season. So you're seeing that Maestro was the closing film. All of Us Strangers was in there. And so American Fiction was a big screening. And I think the Robert Townsend did the Q&A with Poor Jefferson, which I think was a inspired choice. But yeah, so I think it varies to degrees. I think this year was super important for people trying to catch up on international films, international feature contenders. I think that was definitely what we were doing this year. But last year, you look at it and like that was where Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio really launched its campaign. Mm-hmm. It was a huge Fableman screening in LA. And so it varies year to year, but it is. It can be kind of the final boost or the final destination to really premiere a film that could be an awards play. Though
I've already forgotten the opening night movie.
I was gonna say
unmemorable title. I was gonna say the end of the world. So leave this movie behind, everybody.
I disagree. I love style. I love just going wild, spinning the camera any which way. Let's go for it.
It was fun. I had a really good time with my friend who's a producer who develops scripts and stuff. And he and I went through it with a fine tooth comb, deconstructing everything that was wrong with the script, which can be, you know, a good time. But and I also didn't think it was a good role for Julia Roberts, who I revere. I love her. And I admire her for being willing to show her age, you know, and not playing younger than she is. But Ethan Hawke, I adore. But this was not a good role for her. It was a very unpleasant. She obviously took it on because she was willing to serve the message of the movie. She was a producer on it. So, it's a story. It's a dystopian thriller that, you know, posits the end of the world, basically. And this family, this sort of woman and her husband and her child are staying in an Airbnb, a beautiful mansion in the country. And then the people who live there come back because there's an outage in New York. And so you're with the fabulous Mahershala Ali and his child. So you have a very wary and skeptical and perhaps racist approach from
No, I think that was a highlight, though, because, of course, you have your take on Julia's performance. But I was so happy to see Mahala, who is known for Industry on HBO and Bodies, 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 just really
she was terrific.
Opposite her playing Mahershala's daughter. in the film. And so that was definitely my way in, rooting for her.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll that's going to show up on Netflix, right? Is that
right? Yeah.
So that was a premiere, but otherwise I did catch up on Society of the Snow, which is J.A. Bayona's latest movie. He went back to Spain. He's been working on it for like 10 years. This is a filmmaker that I have long admired. I loved The Orphanage, which was in Spanish, which was sort of his breakout. I loved the Impossible, which was a survivor movie, which introduced Tom Holland, believe it or not.
Exactly.
To the world. And he went on to do one of the Jurassic Park movies, and I thought did it beautifully. He's an incredible craftsman. And this movie takes on the story that you may remember from Alive, of the Uruguayan soccer team stranded.
Rugby. I thought it was soccer too, because rugby. Yellow Jackets, but.
Sorry about that. So they end up in the mountains, stranded and invisible, and resorting to various ways of surviving that are unpleasant, to say the least, cannibalism being the word. But it isn't gross. It isn't horrible. And if you read the book, it's not as graphic as the book. What did you think of it?
I was definitely nervous. I'm not one to watch stories about cannibalism. And I think that it's so immediately devastating because, like I said, like we have Yellow Jackets fresh in our minds, which is kind of a play on the story a little bit. But when the plane crashes, they're just stuck on a snowy mountain. And it's immediately clear that there's not any resources there, and so you're immediately feeling the sort of hopelessness of being in that environment. And yeah, there were just times where I was ready to like burst into tears at how bleak it was.
Beautiful man. Yeah. And the man who's narrating it is this sort of poet.
Yeah.
This lovely spiritual guy, very beautiful, and they all respect him and admire him, and he's telling the story, and it's often very moving.
Was the thing. It's deeply moving.
People
poetic,
die,
yeah,
and they die in different ways and in different.
But it wasn't like exploitative.
No.
It wasn't. You're not like, when's the cannibalism coming? No,
not at all. They were very discreet. But the Q&A came along, and there were two survivors there.
Oh wow!
And they were still beautiful, right? You know, and very happy with the movie. It really, as far as they were concerned, it really captured what they went through spiritually as well,
right.
You know, and you could see when you talk to Bayona, he's just one of those very serious, very passionate people who takes it all, you know, deeply seriously, and that it's in the movie, it shows.
Yeah,
that's a Spanish entry, and that's also Netflix. Netflix came on board of that. What else did you catch up with? Well, we both saw Memory.
Right. Okay, so you did see it. I thought that was very strong. And it goes in one direction early on. And there are definitely some people who are like, oh, this is not the movie that I want to watch. And it takes a turn that really works out in the end. I think that Jessica Chastain and Peter Sarsgaard together are really a wonderful pair, and I think they were right. I believe it was Jessica requesting, let me work with Peter, but that was the right move. I think that seeing them opposite each other as these sort of people persevering through real,
they're both damaged,
real toughness. Yeah,
they're both damaged, very deeply damaged, and they find some resources in each other, and looking after each other. I was very moved by it, and the acting is amazing. Jessica and Peter are both amazing. And Michelle Franco, the Mexican director who I've admired for a long time, what he does is he makes this very spare, austere, no frills movie, very controlled, very detailed, but it's not expected. It doesn't go in the, you know, in the directions that you think. The romantic trope, such as it is, does not play out the way you would expect. And the children are important. The support workers in their lives are important. The families, everything was good. I liked it. What's going to happen to it is another matter. it's been picked up.
Ketchup Entertainment.
So what do we know about them? I know that nothing.
They released Hypnotic, which I don't know if you remember that film from this year, but that was the Robert Rodriguez film starring Ben Affleck that did not fare too well at the box office. And Ben did not go to the premiere, even though he went to J-Lo's premiere of The Mother.
That's hilarious. I had forgotten all of that. Well, this movie is, actors will like it. It's not, but there's a lot of competition. And so it's such an interesting question of what's going to happen this year because of the strike.
Right.
So they have a waiver so they can work, and they've made the decision to open it before the end of the year, which very recently. So they're coming in very late, even though it started in Venice. So it's a question of what they can accomplish with presumably limited means between now and the end. Now, Andrea Riseborough accomplished a great deal with a very good performance in a very small but good movie. And this qualifies for those things. But I don't know what they can manage.
I think they're being very realistic about it, because ultimately, one, like, the fact that Peter won Best Actor at Venice is a big deal. But he's being submitted for Best Supporting Actor in the Oscar race. And he's definitely someone that you can see a lot of actors getting behind, because he's been at it so long and has done really great work. But I think the fact that it's supporting actor in particular does show a realistic view of how the film could enter the awards race.
Okay, so Jessica just won recently, a few years ago, for the Eyes of Tammy Faye. And she is so good so often that she was incredible in the George and Tammy series recently, which is,
he's gonna have to wait a long time for that Emmy. Not until January.
That's right. So I but that doesn't hurt. But on the other hand, I think people almost take her for granted, and I think she gives an extraordinary performance here. In a way, Peter's performance is less showy, even though he's playing a particular disability that is interesting to see unfold, and I haven't seen it portrayed this way. So it's interesting, but I don't know. I think she has the showier part. There's more dramatics going on.
It's just Best Actress. I mean, that is a tough race to enter, but
impossible.
Yeah. I should say the other thing too, Peter was the one who was front and center this weekend at the AFI Fest screening. Jessica was not in attendance, but hopefully she's taking a break, because she had an Emmys campaign, a Tony's campaign this year.
That's right.
She was at Venice, so she's really been out and about.
The dollhouse, right? Yeah. Okay. I was glad to catch up with that. And then I saw Four Daughters, which is one of the foreign entries, which is also a doc entry. So this is one of those hybrid movies that it played at Cannes. It shared the doc prize at Cannes. So at least the doc jury at Cannes gave it points for being a good documentary. But I could see the documentary branch of the Academy, not all of them embracing her approach, which is to fix actors with the real people and try to tell the story by showing the interaction between the two. There's all sorts of questions when that happens, of what kind of revisited trauma is coming back, and you know, I actually admired it. I think it works, but it's audacious, it's radical, and it's a question of how many people are going to embrace that.
Yeah, I can imagine it's tough. I think the film that I saw, Italy's entry, Io Capitano, is similar in that you are seeing a real life story of such like imminent struggle, because you see the migrant journey from Senegal through the desert of Africa and the human trafficking of Libya and that struggle to get out, and then finally having to get on these rickety boats and cross the Mediterranean with such little guidance. I think sort of these films that are having us relive these people's struggle, it's such a tricky line to be on. And so it's very cool to see the ways that like the filmmakers of Four Daughters, Io Capitano, are taking these approaches.
Well, Matteo Garrone is one of the great filmmakers, so I'm looking forward to seeing that, even if it is a grim slog.
I think slog maybe. I'm not that necessarily harsh about it. I think he is a talented filmmaker, but it is a tough watch, sort of seeing what they go through. And I imagine same with Four Daughters. There's times that are really heartbreaking.
So part of what's going on is that we're heading into the December voting for the shortlist. So a lot of campaigning is going on, and eventually we will have the shortlist announced, and we'll find out what the 15 docs are, the 15 international films, and a lot of the other craft categories as well. So there's a lot going on as we proceed. But so what the other movie that we were tracking, that we started watching it, we saw it at Telluride, was Bike Riders.
Yes.
So this is Jeff Nichols. This is the extraordinary trio of Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and the inimitable, the extraordinary
Tom Hardy. There we go. Quite the intro for Tom Hardy.
He will not be named, but he is amazing in it. And so we are heading into, that was going on its merry way, and they suddenly withdrew it and pushed it back, and they don't know if they're going to open it in December or not. And what do you make of that? What's your analysis of that news?
I mean, part of me is like, let's get it over with. We like the film. I think there's definitely an audience for it. It maybe isn't getting the response that they necessarily wanted, having its big premiere at Telluride. But on the same end, if they were to make the ultimate decision of like, we want to wait until the strike's over, we want Tom, Jody, Austin front and center, and there's even more people, Michael Shannon, Toby Wallace is a new breakout that's in, you mentioned he was in the Royal Hotel, but it's a really good cast. But with all this talk of what's going to happen next year, if they were to wait, then maybe it will have more of an awards play in 2024. So it's interesting to see it play out, but
this is one of those neither fish nor fowl kind of movies where sometimes they call it a tweener, right?
Yeah.
Where just in terms of what is the audience for this movie? And I know the actors in the Academy are going to go for it. That's not a question, because the acting is so good. But it had, it's a genre movie. But it's an art movie. It's noisy, and people are on motorcycles wearing leather jackets.
Yeah.
And people are having long, intense conversations in front of the camera. So it is not either thing. It's not a genre movie, and it's not an art film. So what I think that may be behind Disney's questions about its commerciality, honestly, that would be my guess. But what I think they're going to do, I think they will qualify it for a week in December and have their cake and eat it too, and open it in January.
There you go. Yeah. I think
that's what I would do.
Yeah. No, I agree. I definitely see sort of the wider audience for it. I think awards might be tougher, but yeah, I've never seen a film where so quickly I was like, oh, watching this with my dad would be excellent. He would love
this. Oh, that's good. Oh, that's a good sign. All right.
Yeah.
So coming up, we have big shocking news yesterday. We're recording this on Thursday, so it was Wednesday. What the hell? The Writers Guild Awards are going to be a month after the Oscars. And I was shocked by this, and then I sort of dug into it and thought about it. And it feels like it isn't going to have that much impact on the Oscars. It'll have an impact on our ability to prognosticate the Oscars.
Right.
But the nominations will come out during the period when people are voting. So that will have an impact. There's so many categories that are ineligible anyway, you know, in the foreign, a lot of the Brits, animation, these are all irrelevant to the Writers Guild. So it always has a little bit of an asterisk on it anyway, you know.
Yeah.
But what do you think? Is it going to, how is it going to impact the ecosystem of the Oscars?
Yeah, I mean, with Film Awards, it's almost like it's the show where it's like, let's get it over with. We want to see the winner. This is kind of late in the game. Like, just show us who we should put our chips behind in the last stretch of Oscars predictions.
They're always at the end. The Guild Awards are the last ones.
So it would have been nice if it were still before the Oscars, but it's really not the end of the world. Because like you said, there is those asterisks on what kind of contenders are allowed in for it.
Also, one of the people I spoke to said, you know, it's just a few categories that are overlapping with the Oscars. They have a ton of other media and podcasts and television and all that. So what do you think the impact on the Emmy race would be?
It's weird. I mean, kudos to you for really unpacking kind of what this could mean. But I think on the TV side, and I should say in a print piece, that's what I meant. But but on the TV side, it is so far into the season that it's probably a month into when Emmy campaigns normally start. And so
referring to the year before.
Yeah, so normally, like for this year, for example, this year, at the very beginning of March is when four-year consideration events for the Emmys begin. And so the House of the Dragons FYC event, and this is where they bring out the cast and crew to talk to Emmy voters and kind of convince them to vote for them. House of the Dragon was what kicked it off. And so House of the Dragon was already campaigning for Emmys before the Oscars even happened. And so next year, presumably, if they keep the same schedule, I don't think they will, because it's very unclear what the TV schedule will look like in the winter.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it would.
The strike is what's affecting all of this.
Right. And so if anything, I mean, long story short, I think it would be a boost to the newer shows that are campaigning for 2024 Emmys. And so The Bear season 2 or Prime Video's I'm a Virgo or the other Black girl that was on Hulu, some of these newer shows that came out in the summer. But also eligible is something like Beef, which will be sort of long over by the time it possibly gets WGA win. Yeah.
So what really happened here is that they were all caught up in the strike, right? That was what was going on. And then they went in and looked at all the submission dates, and you could just see them working backwards, trying to figure out how to make it work. And they didn't have time for people to make the submissions, deadlines, you know, those, it's a behind the scenes kind of thing that goes on with all the different guilds and all the different awards, but you have to submit and you have to have certain forms filled out and, you know, regulations met, you know. So anyway, so they figured all that out, and but I don't think this will apply to any of the others, like PGA or nobody. The producers aren't on strike, right? And this DGA, they settled, you know, and so on. So I SAG is long; they have their schedule figured out a long time ago. So
yeah.
I don't think any.
They're even already
on strike, even though they're still on strike.
Though we don't know how the. I mean, two things. One, we don't know what exactly the SAG Award situation is, because this is the first year that Netflix is fully running it. They did a live stream on their YouTube page, not on the Netflix platform, last year, and so TV.
Are they supposed to do Netflix Live?
I mean, they've done live events before to varying results. But just the last note on the WGA Awards, it makes sense that TV would be leading the conversation because we always talk about it as kind of a writer's medium. And I think even during the strike, the most vocal people were mostly TV writers. And so I think that's a part of it as well, like it having more of an effect on the TV races than the film races.
Also one of the notoriously long
and and on both coasts.
When is this going to be over? I mean, they're always very also very smart and entertaining, and they have really good people, but I bet this year will be interesting. I would go actually just to see what they say and how they couch what they just went through, you know, the, the whole experience of the strike and the politics. They're very political, the writers, you know, so it's a whole thing.
But yeah, SAG is definitely one to watch. It's kind of all over the place. It's definitely still happening to our knowledge, but they've already sort of put it out there that you can't actually campaign, but you can submit, but like submitting is kind of campaigning. And so it's complex as they're sort of, I think we hope it
a
seems
lot of mixed
like
messages there.
It seems like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So hopefully next week,
crossing
this is all
our
cleared
fingers,
up. Yes.
Crossing our fingers. Yeah.
On so many fronts.
No, I heard, I did hear one guy say, that this is anecdotal. It doesn't mean that everyone is doing this, but some guy, some producer was submitting something and was told that the actor they were interested in was reading.
Right.
That is key, right?
Yeah.
It means that the system is in, is moving. It's not static.
Yeah. I told you my favorite was like, hey, it looks like this might be ending. So here's a big red carpet invite.
Oh my God.
Here's like 20 names that might be there if this gets fixed.
That's hilarious. So that's what's going on. They've booked the roundtables for the Hollywood Reporter and the LA Times, and they know who's going to be, you know, supposedly showing up, if, assuming that all the schedules work out. But I find that amusing also. Yeah. That's all set up. All right. So the next thing on the big calendar coming up out of the award season is Sundance.
Yes. Right?
So Sundance is coming up in January, and they announced that they're going to, on opening night, do a lovely tribute, honor Christopher Nolan, who you don't think of as a Sundance guy, but maybe he's campaigning for Oscars. Maybe, you know,
maybe.
Could be.
There you go.
And then you have Celine Song for Past Lives, which of course made a big splash at Sundance. It is campaigning for the Oscars for real. And then Maid Alberti, the Chilean documentary filmmaker who has this extraordinary movie, The Eternal Memory, which is part of our talk series, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, we didn't have a chance to go last year, but it definitely is an interesting new event that they're doing.
Program last year.
And so, I mean, it is smart. I do think Nolan being there is kind of reaching a crowd that may have complicated feelings about him, even though I think across the board, people watched Oppenheimer and were like, that's a good film. And so
there's too much debate about that.
Yeah. And I think also there's the perspective as well of like, these are audiences that are really big on like theatrical exhibition, and he really is the guy that's championing.
He's the poster boy.
Yeah. So I mean, there's Nolan fans in every corner of film, but I think that it's kind of an off the beaten path, smart decision for him to show up there. And of course, everyone wants to accept a nice award. So shout out to him. Amazing that Celine is there as well. I think Past Lives was the hottest ticket last year.
And it needs to be brought back into people's minds. It definitely needs a little boost. So the other, and I actually think that The Eternal Memory is a good shot to get a nomination.
Yeah.
I'm not even worried about it.
Yeah.
So then on the local exhibition front, we have, we have Vidiot's going strong, which is great. We've got the Academy Museum doing its thing, which is great. But what is coming up is the opening of The Egyptian, finally. Right. Netflix did a big overhaul of this big theater, this big old theater on Hollywood Boulevard. This American Cinematheque has been programming it and will continue to do so. There's a new guy who's going to be booking it, but they're starting out. This is good. They have 70mm projection there.
Right.
And so they also have nitrate projection. I happened to see Casablanca there.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
That was memorable. And you really could see, it isn't a, it's palpable what you see with a nitrate print. It's extraordinary, beautiful. And then you have, so they're going to show big 70mm movies
a whole festival. Yes.
So what are you watching on TV these days? What's your,
oh, like, Lord,
what would you recommend to really good, something really good?
I'm so in movie mode, but I will say sort of one of the shows that has been kind of a nice treat for the downtime is there's this show coming to Paramount Plus that's actually an Australian import called Colin from Accounts. I think you would enjoy it.
Writing it down.
It really is comparable to a lot of the FX comedies that people have fallen in love with over like the past 10 to 15 years. It's like a black romantic comedy. Like,
I'm in. My guilty pleasure is Loki. I love this show. And I love Tom Hiddleston in it. And I always want him. I love Owen Wilson in it. I love Gugu Mbatha-Raw in it. You know, it's all good. I'm having fun with that. It isn't taxing my brain in any way, but there's plenty of money thrown around. And so they keep us amused.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's my way. I have the Marvel shows that I like are the Marvel shows that are less talked about. I thought Miss Marvel was brilliant. She-Hulk. I am one of the people who's like, you guys got to give it a second chance. But Loki, I think I enjoyed it. That episode season one where they're stuck on the planet together, I thought was really beautiful. I find some of it to be such an exposition dump of like, here's the timeline. Here's the other timeline. This is America. This is the TVA. Blah, 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 blah. Like, okay. All right. This is, I think I need a pamphlet for this to keep up. But the additions of Rafael Casal, Kiwi Kwan, like they really got great actors on this show.
And we've got the villain.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a, you may not be named. But yeah, I mean, that is such a complicated situation. We don't have answers to it yet.
The trial of Jonathan Majors is going forward. And I have to say, he's very good in this series.
Right. That was never the issue. He's a great actor.
He's a very good actor. Yeah. I want to recommend Beyond Utopia is a documentary opening this Friday, which is about North Korea. And if you think you know what's going on in North Korea, you do not.
No.
And this movie is going to really open your eyes to, because it focuses on these two defectors who are trying to come over. And the guy, this guy, this wonderful sort of heroic guy named Pastor Kim, who's running this underground railroad to help people get through. And it's very complicated because mm-hmm. there's this big demilitarized zone between mined with like 2 million mines between North Korea and South Korea. So you have to go to China, which is communist and hostile to people trying to leave North Korea. And you have to go. And then there's Laos and Cambodia, and you have to get to Thailand to be free. So it's a very complicated, riveting. I mean, they're tracking these actual stories, and they're heartbreaking. So
it's a tense international thriller. Like, it really takes you on the ground on this family's journey getting out of North Korea, but ultimately there are parts of it that are really hopeful. And so yeah, I totally agree. It's a great watch. It came out of Sundance this year as well.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to recommend for openers this week or?
So next week, I think is a very cool, fun film dream scenario. And it's another one of these movies that is, oh, Nicolas Cage return to form. I feel like he's been having a lot of that lately, but here he appears as a guy that for some reason is appearing in everyone's dreams, and sort of unpacking the attention, the fame that comes with that.
I can support the dream scenario. That's a good
exactly the dream scenario. There we go.
All right. Thank you, Marcus. Thanks for helping us out. The Ryan will be back next week. Latanzio.
There we go.
We'll
thanks
out
for
where
having
he went.
Me.
Okay. Bye-bye. Yeah.
See ya.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit CANeighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.